It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
Steve, I had the privilege of interviewing you and Esther Dyson just a couple of months ago. I think it was the M Health Summit down here, and we talked a lot about what it was like in the 80s when you were building America Online, when you were an unknown entrepreneur showing up. Was it PC Forum? Esther Dyson's PC Forum?
I showed up anywhere. I was just trying to sell the dream. Most people thought we were crazy.
Yeah, well,
kind of like you guys. You know, right. I'm sure you have the same reaction when you're talking about what you're working on.
Well, it's. I want to go back there for a little bit because I think people think of Steve Case probably different than those people who knew you back when knew you. But this idea that Steve Case, the entrepreneur, talking about something that literally not only didn't exist, but a lot of people didn't even understand why it would exist or if it would really come to fruition. Can you take us back a little bit?
Sure.
And in doing so also, we're watching this healthcare industry completely get reimagined. And I think if there's any similarities that you can draw, that'd be helpful.
Well, first of all, it's great to be here again. Congratulations on the success that you and Unity have had over the last 3 years. It's also great to be here with Jerry Levin, who I've known for 25 years, something like that, and a great friend. And it's great to see so much enthusiasm, so much excitement about what's possible about reimagining healthcare. And I think the connection in terms of my story, I actually moved to the Washington, D.C. area 31 years ago. My first attempt at a startup in this space failed. The company I joined called GameLine didn't work, but luckily two of the people I met there and I ended up starting what became AOL in 1985. And at the time we were launching, and it was America Online because we wanted to get America Online, only 3% of people were online. And they were only online 1 hour a week. So when we said we wanted to get America Online, we said someday we believe this, there'll be this online phenomenon and it will change how people live and connect and so forth. Most people thought we were crazy. And in fairness, for a decade, the evidence was in favor of the theory that we were crazy, because it was a slow, hard slog. Even when we went public in 1992, we were the first internet company to go public. We'd been at it now for 7 years, and we had 184,000 customers after 7 years. It was hard, and there were times where people, including my parents, said, seemed like a good idea. You seemed really passionate about it, but it's not working so well. Maybe you should go back to working for a real company. And I just stuck with it because I really believed in the idea of the internet. Eventually, a bunch of things started to happen. It's worth pointing out, it wasn't until 1991, so we'd been at it for quite a while, that it even was legal to connect our service to the internet. Up until then, the internet was for non-commercial use, educational institutions, government institutions. So there were a lot of reasons. Modems were not built into PCs, and there were a lot of networks were too expensive. There were a lot of reasons that this was not taken off. Finally, it did, and we suddenly became this overnight success, but we really were a decade in the making. And I think that's the connection to what's happening here. I think a lot of you have been at this for a while. There are many serial entrepreneurs who have done a number of different things. I think recognizing that revolutions will eventually happen, but they often happen in evolutionary ways, and having the patience and the persistence, the perseverance to stick it through, I think is critically important, and not giving up, not believing that it's impossible. I remember meeting Nelson Mandela when he was turning 85 and visited his home, and he said something that always struck with me and I think is relevant on this topic, was it always seems impossible until it's done. it just seems impossible, particularly to most people who are kind of the naysayers, and then suddenly something happened. And I thought your slide at the beginning was very helpful in aligning the kind of the macro factors that are beginning to come together. So this is sort of a shake the snow globe moment, the technology, the changes in in policy, the growing needs of consumers, the growing frustration that they have through technology, particularly the internet, figured out better ways to manage many aspects of their lives and still puzzle why this health thing is so complicated and hard and confusing and scary. And so there's just a lot of factors. I really do believe, even though a number of you have been at it for a while, you know, the next 5 or 10 years are going to be critical, but it's going to require sticking with it. It's not easy. There are easy, you know, this is a tough challenge.
So one of the things you said when we were at mHealth was this notion of what kind of companies were around you in the 80s. So we talked about print driver companies, right, and spreadsheet companies, and this idea that really one-trick ponies kind of, right, were the beginning of the development of a new industry. A lot of times the criticism that, you know, people make, executives at big companies make when they see startups come along is think, that's just one thing that we, right, need, and it's not enough. Can you talk a little bit about the evolution of a new industry and kind of what the right place, you know, kind of as a life cycle, what actually are the beginning pieces to create that transformation?
I think there are a lot of factors that have to come to play, and that's why it takes a while to kind of orchestrate, you know, the revolution. But in early stages, there tends to be a trend of companies focusing on initially on features, and then it kind of broadens to products, and then if they're successful, it broadens to platforms. And I think we're in that kind of phase here. And as you mentioned, in the 80s, in the personal computer business, there were some platform companies, Microsoft, for example, with Windows, but a lot of software companies emerged that were trying to just do one thing that, in this case, Microsoft wasn't particularly doing. So there are companies that were solely focused on being spell checker software, or solely focused on being, you know, printer drivers. And some that were successful ended up evolving to doing broader things, or some would just focus on a word processor or just on a spreadsheet. Over time, these features kind of get amalgamated into products and then get, you know, broadened into platforms. I think figuring out with your companies how to have the benefit of focus, which is obviously critical for any entrepreneurial success. You've got to be really sharply focused, but not so narrowly focused that you don't participate when things break into this broader kind of, you know, platform opportunity. So sometimes it means adding other features, sometimes it means combining with other companies, sometimes it means partnering with other folks, figuring out where you're going to evolve, how you're going to evolve in this ecosystem. And I think one of the things that's different about health, it's also true about education and transportation, energy. I've said this, we're about to break the third wave of the internet. The first wave, which I participated in, was, you know, 85 to 2000, was really building the internet, just building the foundation, building awareness, getting people connected. So with AOL and Cisco, a lot of companies were part of that first wave of just building the internet. The last 15 years, the second wave is building on top of the internet. So this is, you know, Facebook and Twitter and a lot of other companies basically building products on top of the internet. This third wave is really integrating the internet into everyday life, things like the Internet of Things, so it almost becomes invisible, and using it to fundamentally reimagine and reshape big parts of our lives and big industries, health being critically important. You know, as you all know, because you're here, it's 1/6 of our economy, and it doesn't work so well. But this third wave is actually going to be pretty different than the second wave. And the two things that are going to be most different, I think, are the need for partnerships and the need for engagement on policy, because it's tough in any business, but particularly tough in health to go it alone. You're going to have to figure, which is why what you're trying to do with, yeah, Startup Health is so important. You're going to have to figure out some way to network yourself together and establish strategic partnerships. There's a African proverb I cite a lot, which is, if you want to go quickly, you can go alone, but if you want to go far, you must go together. And I think that really...
Can you repeat that, please?
You want to go quickly, you can go alone. If you want to go far, you must go together, whether it be networking with like you're doing here, or connecting to other kinds of organizations. So this partnership, which is a different skill set, there are a lot of entrepreneurs that are kind of lone rangers. They just want to come up with some product and drop it in the app store and hope it ends up being like Snapchat and it's wildly successful. But the skill around partnerships is critical, particularly because, as you all know, healthcare, while there's different segments, and we can talk about that, it's more of an enterprise business than it is a consumer business. That means it requires more partnership. On the policy side, not just we're in DC and policy, you know, kind of plays a role, like, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which was sort of one of these shake the snow globe moments. And there's, you know, understanding policy and how it's going to evolve will impact how these businesses will evolve, but also just recognizing that the government, whether you like it or not, and there are a lot of people in, you know, who don't want to engage with the government, is actually the biggest customer and funder of healthcare. So if you want to revolutionize healthcare, you probably should talk to your largest customer, which, oh, by the way, is the government. So again, that need to engage on the policy side, not just regulatory policy, but government as a customer, and your need to engage on the partnership side is going to be a different skill set. And the companies that I guess are going to be successful in this third wave are going to still do things like, you know, the products and platform and people and passion and perseverance, some of the things that were critical, but are going to add these two new ingredients around partnership and policy. Those probably will separate the winners and losers.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason I asked you to repeat that was because one of the things we often talk about with entrepreneurs, and I think the serial entrepreneurs understand this the most, but I think the way you just described the importance of it, you can either try to do this alone or you can be a part of an army of entrepreneurs and collaborators who want to work together. And at the end of the day, which one's going to be more powerful to actually get it done? So.
And it's true. It's true in sectors like health. It's also true in regions. Part of that came yesterday from this conference you're mentioning, Up Global Conference. We had 525 leaders of communities from 75 countries come to Las Vegas for like a four-day, kind of startup palooza. And it was great to see the excitement, not just happening in the usual places, but, you know, kind of in the middle of America. And then there was a guy came from Syria who's doing, you know, startup weekends in Syria and Kosovo and Brazil and all over the world. What the key to drive those is to create a network effect, to create network density. You know, you can't get liftoff unless you have that network density. That's true whether you're in Detroit or Kosovo. It's also true if you're focused on health. You've got to create that network effect. You've got to figure out how to be part of a broader, you know, movement, a broader crusade, which is why things like startup health is so important.
So one of the things that when we first got to spend more time with Jerry many years ago talked about was everybody's got a story, a reason they're passionate about doing what they're doing. I think outside of healthcare, couponing, gaming, lots of other sectors, there might not be as much of a passion or a story sometimes for what people are being built because of maybe an experience they had. But why are you so passionate about healthcare? I know that you're incredibly passionate about entrepreneurship and job creation and immigration, but I know you're very passionate about healthcare as well. A little bit of elaboration.
I think it's a little bit of, kind of like many of these things, a little bit of the head, a little bit of the heart kind of thing. On the head side, it is 1/6 the economy. It is going to get revolutionized. It's going to get disrupted. That makes it an interesting challenge and also creates huge business opportunity. So it's game on. These things are going to get pretty interesting. And then on more of the personal side, I've had my own experiences, both with my own health, my kids' health, my brother who passed away from cancer, watching all my parents who are older and have a bunch of different issues. What unites all those different experiences is they don't work very well. They just don't work very well. And so trying to figure out ways to create a healthcare system that is more about health than sick, which I know you all are focused on, and recognize there's something different about wellness and managing chronic disease and managing more acute life-threatening kind of diseases. Those are actually different segments that operate differently. But how do you create better outcomes at lower cost with more convenience? And technology is not the only answer, but it's part of the answer. And consumerism isn't the only answer, but it's part of the answer. How do you take these forces of technology and innovation and getting consumers to feel more in control of their health again after having essentially outsourced it for more than a half a century to other people, mostly because the other people are paying? They do care about their health. They do care about their family's health. They do care about their friends' health. They just have been kind of a little bit on the sidelines. How do you bring them back and so they're kind of in the driver's seat, not the passenger seat, and how to use technology as a way to innovate, to create interesting products and services that improve people's lives, make the world a better place, and oh, by the way, take what is 1/6 of the economy and disrupt it in a way that creates enormous opportunity. And oh, by the way, how do we make sure that as a nation we lead in the innovations around that, because that will have global potential.
So you mentioned the government, such a big customer, such a big important kind of player. It's one of the reasons we launched from down here and thought the framework of kind of a launch pad of being in Washington was so important in the White House. The Affordable Care Act has, as a lot of people are calling it now, a treasure trove of opportunities for entrepreneurs and businesses, business models and things that even just 6, 12, 18 months ago weren't even available. I want to tie it a little bit to job growth or potential job growth and get a little bit of your take on how you think it could play a role in job growth, not just from the idea of more people to run all the different stuff that healthcare reform now requires, but I think the opportunities that are now opened up to entrepreneurs.
Well, I think it'll be a mixed bag. I think it'll be mostly positive, but clearly one of the things that technology will do, as it's done in other industries, is do things more efficiently, creating productivity gains, so there will be some parts of the healthcare system where jobs will be lost, or there are other parts where jobs will be gained. It's not going to be just kind of one way, and that's inevitable. That's part of the process of technology innovation. But I think the thing that I know there's a big debate, and will continue for a few years, particularly when we come up around elections, around what exactly happens with the the spreadsheets in terms of how does this work and who's in and how do you get it funded. And I think it'll take probably 3, 4, 5 years for that to settle out. And I'll leave that to the debate of the accountants and the policy wonks. I think the two things as it relates to startups that are interesting about the Affordable Care Act. Number one, it was, as I said before, a pretty fundamental change that is sort of this kind of like shaking the snow globe. And exactly how it plays out is unclear, but everybody has to kind of rethink what they are and where they're going based on that. As a result, people move out of their kind of comfort zone and start thinking about the art of the possible and being more open to new models and innovation. That's, I think, a really big deal. And the second is actually one of the parts that didn't get as much attention by the Affordable Care Act is it actually made it much easier for people to leave big companies to start or join small companies because their insurance was portable. That's a really big deal. There are a lot of people I've talked to who wanted to do something in the startup but were worried that they would kind of lose what they had. So I think that will help accelerate the startup movement in general, but also startups particularly in healthcare. So I think it's a big opportunity. It's not, again, I think anybody who is focused on this, as you are, will have to take that long view as we started. AOL ultimately was successful. The internet now is part of everyday life. It took a decade before we really kind of broke through. So I think it'd be a mistake to come in thinking like, launch something and voila, a year later it's going to be a huge hit. Maybe you'll get lucky, but most of them are going to be a long slog over 5 or 10 years that requires patience and perseverance and partnerships and the things we talked about. But the inevitability that this revolution in health has now been, the starting gun has been fired, and it's going to be an interesting decade with enormous opportunities for startups and entrepreneurs with great ideas who bring the right teams together, focused on the right problems, and with the right kind of partners. I think it's an unparalleled opportunity, and also the kind of thing that I think entrepreneurs should be focusing on. One of the things I get frustrated about sometimes, although I celebrate any entrepreneur trying to do anything, is all too often they're focused on easy problems and have a kind of a short-term built-to-flip mentality. I want entrepreneurs focused on hard problems and to have a longer-term built-to-last kind of mentality. And health is a hard problem, but is there anything we as individuals or we as a society care about more than like health? It's pretty fundamental. So let's focus our attention on that, which is why it's great to to see what's happening here and great to be supporting the startup health movement. And thank you for your leadership. And now we probably should switch to the real fun part, which is the 59-second pitches. Yeah. But are there any last questions?
One nice ending question, because a lot of people here aren't entrepreneurs, but they work at companies. They're executives of insurance companies, hospital systems, pharmaceutical companies,
government. Well, I just explained to them they can now leave because of the portability of insurance and join the startup movement.
But what words of wisdom? You talked about collaboration. I think one of the most important things that most startups have in terms of obstacles that they have is pilot programs, early customer development when they're just startups. They're rarely funded with more than a few $100,000 when they're beginning. Some of them even get, up to the gate and they're, culturally, the hospital system. What words of wisdom would you tell executives, not entrepreneurs, to kind of embrace perhaps more willingly startups and entrepreneurs as an instigator of change within their organizations?
Well, I think the number one thing is most of the smart people don't work for you. They work for somebody else. So get out of your office and go meet them and find out what they're doing. Most of the good ideas are not within your company. They're in somebody else's company or in somebody else's garage. And I think the pace of innovation, the pace of change is such that if your companies aren't understanding that and aren't figuring out ways to connect, network themselves in terms of what's happening around the the edges, around the periphery, what they're doing, they will lose their way and they will lose their position. And there definitely is a difference between attackers and defenders. And the attackers, you know, usually entrepreneurs, some large companies are pretty good attackers. Google and Apple are still in that mode. By the way, Apple, if you didn't see it, launched their health platform this afternoon. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, there are some who even have scale are pretty innovative, but most end up being kind of defenders focusing on protecting the status quo while the entrepreneurial disruptors are trying to attack and change the game. The large entities have to figure out ways to maintain that attacker mindset. And the best way to do that is usually to network and partner with entrepreneurs doing interesting things and recognize they kind of need you as a customer or as a kind of helping to give them credibility. So it's mutually reinforcing, but respect what they're doing, appreciate what they're doing, be open to what they're doing, and their ideas and their technologies, their products can help, you know, shift what you're doing so it is more relevant in the future and you remain a leader as opposed to kind of lose your way. So I don't think anybody can, you know, move into the protect defense, they call it, in sports, and just focus on protecting what's there. They will lose their way. You've got to go where Wayne Gretzky said, you know, in terms of being in hockey, you have to go where the puck is going, not focus on where the puck is. That requires kind of getting out of your comfort zone, and that requires engaging with entrepreneurs. So, you know, in all seriousness, the folks from larger companies that are here, I think it's terrific. Yeah, and hopefully you'll learn from these 40 pitches and meet some people, and 2, 3, 4 of them actually will be things that you will find interesting to you, and you can be helpful to them, and build a reputation as an organization as being kind of startup friendly, open to entrepreneurs, and figure out ways to engage them, not make it hard for them, make it easy for them. That will attract more innovation, more people that ultimately will not just be interesting new business on the side, but help influence what you're doing at the core of your business. This is the future of these industries is evolving and innovating, which will require connecting to the world outside of you, not just focusing within your walls.
Well, excellent. I want to thank you first for the fireside chat today. I really appreciate you spending the time. I know that you spent a lot of time talking to a lot of the entrepreneurs and other people in the room before, so I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. I also want to thank you. As I mentioned, the first call that Jerry and I in Unity made was you when we hadn't even announced this here. So I want to thank you from the very beginning in the many ways that you and Startup America and Up Global have supported us. Don't know if you want to make any other announcements today about other ways you're supporting us, but...
Well, I will say, we haven't announced it before, but we are investors in Startup Belt. We want to support the idea of building this network, building this, you know, portfolio of companies. So some of it is cheerleading in startups in general, particularly cheerleading around some of these sectors that need disruption, but also providing some direct support as investor in Startup Health. So for the companies that are here, I guess I'm a little investor in each of you. So I hope you're really successful and can change the world.
I wanted everyone to understand who, when they're pitching among many investors, but you as an investor in Startup Health. Thank you for everything.
Thank you all for being here. Look forward to hearing the pitches.